Ronananian. The most recent repair attempt was by the thieves up the highway that are running an exhaust shop that were trying to fix it, that charged them $2,000 for a catalytic converter that did nothing to fix the truck or solve the problem. The Car Doctor. If you turn it right or left, do you feel a change in resistance of the key turning?
No.
Is it tighter one way than the other?
No, not really. It feels like it always did when I used the key in the door.
Welcome to the radio home of Ron Ananian, the Car Doctor. Since 1991, this is where car owners the world over turn to for their definitive opinion on automotive repair. If your mechanic's giving you a busy signal, pick up the phone and call in. The garage doors are open.
But I am here to take your calls at 855-560-9900.
And now, here's Ronnie. The thing I like most about the gym is before and after. The workouts are okay. I CrossFit. I'm trying to make myself beautiful once again, if that's possible. I pity poor Tom. Yeah, well, you know, it's the face and body made for radio, Tom. And I do CrossFit every week, but it's nice, you know. You're in there with a younger group of, well, I call them kids, but you know, they're in their 30s and 40s. To me, they're kids, and you know, to hear the conversation and the thoughts of younger people today, especially about their cars, is really interesting. We had the workout this morning, and afterwards, Coach Brian, he was working out with us. He wasn't coaching. Coach Mike was coaching, and Brian came over and started asking me about pickup trucks and availability and, you know, what do I think is a good truck? And I ran him through the list of, you know, what Ron likes, what Ron doesn't like. And, you know, I specifically said to him, I said, you know, Toyota, I think, makes a decent truck. I like Chevrolet as a truck. Fords are okay. I mean, listen, F-150s, F-250s, there's a bazillion of them out there. I personally, from my experience, from my seat, I see some engine issues with some of the F-150s and 250s of late, and you know, you've got to be prepared for that. You know, higher mileage, 120, 130,000 miles. And I guess my bigger concern is that I've noticed that if you have to replace an engine in a Ford versus the Chevy, that, you know, that Ford engine is like $7,000 now. It's not cheap. It's gone way up, and I blame that on some of the electronics and the valve timing components that are in those engines that they've gotten very, very expensive. So, you know, just a casual conversation. And listen, all that could change in 6 months. The car companies turn their selves around and they do something different. And, you know, it was just, Ron, what do you think I should buy? I'm thinking of buying a truck. And then I was explaining to Brian, and then Coach Mike came over and a few other people came over. And see, they don't really know what I do, so it's kind of great. They just think I'm this, which I am, just this local mechanic, and I never mention anything else. And you know, talk about national audiences and stuff. It's just talking about cars. And the conversation inevitably turned to, you know, what they want to buy. And Brian likes the Jeep Gladiators, but he thinks they're overly expensive, which they are. They're you know, he was even telling me, he said, you know, Ron, I priced a Chevy pickup, a Toyota, and a Ford pickup, everything I had previously told him. And he said, I looked at the Jeep Gladiator, and the Jeep Gladiator, equipped the same as the other three, on average, was about $15,000 more. And he said, I couldn't understand that. And I said, well, you're paying for the Jeep name. You're paying for that, you know, that everybody wants a Gladiator, because Jeep used to make a pickup truck years and years, and, you know, 25 years ago, whatever it was, 30 years ago. And they don't anymore, and all of a sudden now they brought it back, they're in demand. But the most interesting thing was to hear, you know, these kids, as I call them, my kids, I think of them as, they all want pickup trucks. They all want to go to Home Depot. They all want to be weekend warriors, you know, moving plywood, peat moss, lawnmowers, flower pots, the whole deal. And it made me realize that cars really still are a lifestyle thing. You know, everybody needs a pickup truck. And I told him that. I kind of closed out the conversation as the next group of people working out came in. I said, you know, everybody needs a pickup truck. You don't realize how much you need a pickup truck until you have one. And then all of a sudden, it's like the best thing since sliced bread. Because now the danger in owning a pickup truck is you go to Home Depot. If you went with a small car, there wasn't too much you could buy. You go with a pickup truck, It's like having a big shopping cart and a little shopping cart when you go to the supermarket. You ever notice how you buy less with a small shopping cart? Now you got this big shopping cart. How much stuff can I fit into this today? And it just, it's good. It's all good stuff. Listen, I guess my point is cars are so much of your lifestyle that you, I don't know if you realize, and I'm hoping you do, that they're just so important. It's so important to drive something that you like, that you need, that fits your budget, that fits what you do. And it's okay if it's old. You know, we work on old cars all the time. We had a 2000 GMC Suburban. Well, it's a GMC. I think it's a Yukon. Same thing, Chevy Suburban 2000. So it's 22 years old, came in this week with an alternator, with a charging system problem. The light had come on. They were traveling, and they made it home about an hour and 15 minutes away running off the battery. And I was kind of surprised to hear that until I got the car in the door, and I diagnosed it. Yeah, it was a bad alternator, and getting the alternator is a whole other story. And I learned something this week because it was my first real exposure for the way it was abused. The battery withstood the abuse, and I realized why after I looked at it. It was an Optima. It was an Optima Yellow Top, as they call it. You know, it was one of the AGM batteries that has a longer service life, that has a better capacitance to run down, or better ability to be run down and recharged. You know, diagnosed it, bad alternator, found the alternator $500 later because GM in 2000 made this very, very specific alternator. It has to, you know, such require 130 amp, and it has to have certain hookups. And it was just, I was like, why can't we just use it? But you can't. It's got to be this, right, depending upon the way the truck is optioned out. And the customer said, do I need a new battery? Because it's date coded 2015, which, you know, if that was a conventional battery, yeah, you would have. But you charge that battery, and I tell you what, I have to say this. Every time I use my associated battery charger, I just love it to death because, you know, it's all push buttons. Turn on the associated charger, tell it what it is, AGM, hook it up. It reads it, boom, done. Charges it right to the level within 33 minutes. The battery was charged correctly, and I was very comfortable testing it, you know, knowing that when it said good, good is good, and battery state of charge was good. But that Optima Yellow Top battery took a beating that it brought these people home with no alternator from an hour and 15 minutes out, traveling at 60, 65 miles an hour, running air conditioning because they didn't realize, they just saw the battery light come on. They didn't realize that they didn't have, you know, an alternator working. They just kind of tra-la'd along. You know, you ever tra-la when you drive? So, you know, you get what you pay for. Now, the point becomes, again, a 2000, a 22-year-old vehicle. Why would you put money into that? Why would you still have that? Because it fits their need. And it's no different than the folks at the gym that everybody wants to have a pickup truck and they want a used pickup truck, or they want to change their SUV into something smaller or bigger. It's because cars become a lifestyle, and it doesn't matter whether it's new or old. There's something very specific about cars today. There's something that will drive you to, look, you can have technical problems with something old. You can have technical issues with something new. We had a 2017 Chrysler Pacifica that came into the shop this week that had a dead battery. The car had 41,000 miles on it. It's just 4 years old, and it needed a battery, an AGM battery, all right? And, you know, this particular one was manufactured by Chrysler. So I'm not sure if Chrysler needs to take a lesson or two from Optima, but, you know, it was just kind of a very stark reality. You know, two AGM batteries, two different tales. Here's a battery that just died a slow death after 4 years. And I can understand why, because the amount of electronics on that 2017 Pacifica versus the 2000 GMC Yukon, it's Wright Brothers to space shuttle stuff. And even the draw test, I thought this was interesting. Even the draw test, Chrysler, in order to make their auto start function work, they tie in a very small battery that just powers up the auto start module and its selective components that make that operation work. We actually had to test the battery differently, doing things in series instead of the way we normally do it with an amp probe to get an accurate reading of draw because of the second battery for the auto starter. We had to go through and disconnect the auto start. They gave us a bunch of options. But It's funny the way the electronics are changing some of the testing that we used to do on everyday stuff to make it work. Cars are changing, right? No news flash there. But in any event, I just thought it was interesting to open up that way. And by the way, more information out on the web. I believe it's OptimaBatteries.com or just Google Optima Batteries. But that stuff that they tell us about the red, the yellow, and the other AGM batteries that Optima makes, all that's true. I saw it firsthand this week and how well it worked. I always say buy the biggest battery you can afford and the biggest battery you can find in some cases. And in this case, it brought these people home very safe and sound. So it was a very, very good thing. Well, we've got a big show for you today. We're going to take your calls at 1-855. I guess 855 would work. 855-560-9900. We're going to have to talk to Tom Ray a little bit. I'm sure he's got some 2 cents about what went on this week. But right now, let's pull over and take a pause. When we come back, we'll open the garage doors. I'm Ron Ananian. Don't go away.
Little GTO, you're really looking fine. 3 deuces and a 4-speed and a 389.
Need advice on how to maintain that classic GTO? Ron is the guy. 855-560-9900. Here's Ron.
And thanks to Tom. Tom passed me a note during the break. He looked it up. OptimaBatteries.com is the website you're looking for an Optima yellow top. So OptimaBatteries.com, great stuff. And by the way, it's Associated Test Equipment. I think it's Associated Equipment. Tom will look that one up at the next break. AssociatedEquipment.com maybe and pass that along as well. Let's get up to Scott in Maine, 68 Ford Mustang and some problems, rear pinion seal and trans leak. Scott, welcome to the Car Doctor, sir. How can I help?
Well, thank you very much for accepting my call.
You're welcome, sir.
I've spent roughly 10 years restoring this car just piece by piece. And had the rear end completely rebuilt with new races, bearings, seals. But I'm leaking rear end fluid out of the pinion seal.
Okay.
And my question was, do you think it could be that the crusher sleeve that's used in between wasn't torqued tightly enough?
Well, I think, listen, there has to be a certain amount of preload on the bearings themselves. If the bearing preload is set right, do you understand what I mean by the term preload?
No, sir.
Okay. So take your hand, put it on your desktop, and without any pressure on it, lightly drag your hand across the desk. There's a certain amount of friction there, right?
Right.
Okay. Now take your hand and push down as hard as you can and drag it across the desk. There's even more friction, right? There's more load. So a bearing in a differential has to have preload. It has to have a certain amount of pressure on it, okay? It's not too much, not too little. We don't want it to bounce around. We don't want there to be play. We don't want your hand to just bounce up off the desktop for no reason. We want a certain amount of, the non-technical term would be crush is what we call it. And I'm hesitant to use that because people think, we're actually trying to crush the bearing. No, we're just trying to get good contact and load, all right? Does the rear end make any noise? Have you driven the car?
Oh, yeah. Okay. I drive it a couple thousand miles a year.
All right, so does the rear end make any noise?
A little bit of a whining noise.
Well, back then, depending upon the type of gear and how the gear was cut, whine could be strictly gear related and not bearing related. So let's, for the sake of conversation, let's assume the rear was assembled correctly. All right.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things you could do is, do you own an inch pound torque wrench?
Yes. I have access to one.
See what kind of rotational torque. Take the wheels off. All right. Put it in neutral. Take the wheels off. This is a posi, I assume.
Yes.
Posi is going to be a little different, but see what kind of rotational torque it takes to move that pinion yoke. Pull the drive shaft down. I'll see like 30 to 60 inch pounds of torque, rotational torque to move that bearing or to move that yoke. 30 to 60. 100 is not going to scare me. 200 is going to scare me. All right.
Okay.
So how does it look? How does it feel? How does it sound? Then my next comment is going to be, and I don't think this is going to be a bearing that's too tight, unless they've really yanked on these things, all right? when they assembled the rear, new yoke?
No. Everything was examined internally, and everything looked fine.
Okay. Because if there was the least little bit of a groove in that yoke, it will tear up the sleeve over time, quickly.
Okay.
So, you know, what did the yoke look like? And then last thing, when they put the yoke onto the pinion where it's splined, I always put a dab of RTV on the inside of the splines, slide it on, and now no gear oil can come up the spline between the spline and the yoke and leak out past the nut. Right?
Okay, because that's exactly where it's coming from.
Okay, so maybe they didn't seal the splines to the yoke. And if that's the case, and, you know, if the yoke looks okay, because I'm sure they're not a dime a dozen to get, you know, I would tell you, you know, put a little RTV. I'm fussy on RTV, as you guys can all imagine. I like, from Permatex, it's a product called The Right Stuff. All right? They come in a small Cheese Whiz can. It'll be black or ultra gray or grayish black.
Familiar with it. Yep.
Okay. You know, if you've got an O'Reilly Auto Parts, they'll have it. If not, jump out to O'ReillyAuto.com. You'll be able to get it there and order it. But, you know, Permatex, The Right Stuff, will work very well there. Just let it dry, you know, slide it on, let it dry. Make sure everything is clean and dry. Although The Right Stuff's a little more forgiving. You can, you know, it can have a little bit of gear oil there. They tell you you can use The Right Stuff right away once you put it on, although we're a little, you know, more, again, the word is fussy, you know, clean and dry everything and then assemble it and then use it a couple hours later. But try that. Try that and see what that does. And it'll be good to note that when you back off the pinion nut, you know, you'll know what rotational torque is. And I think you're going to find that it's pretty hard to crush that crush collar unless you're really pulling hard on it. All right. You've really got to, you know, crush it to get it to move. And then last, when you do put it together, before you take it apart, count the threads. How many threads are exposed past the top of the nut? It's a little unscientific, you know, but it's an eyeball. Yep. It's an eyeball judgment. Where's that point of the nut where the top inside edge of the nut crosses the point of the thread? You know, are you back at that point? I don't care how you mark it. Put a scratch mark in it with an awl. You know, that's where you should end up again with a skosh more. Yeah, a skosh is, you get it. So.
So right. if I do that, would you recommend replacing the crusher sleeve?
No, I don't think you need to. I don't think you need to, Scott. I think you're fine. I think it's just going to be a matter of, you know, if it's leaking out the pinion seal, the crusher sleeve just sets the preload, and once it's there, you're fine. We take many apart, and we've never had an issue with it. So just watch your measurements before and after. Everything should match. You got any other questions? Give me a shout. I'm Ron Anini, the Car Doctor. Back right after this. Back. Ron and Ian, the Car Doctor, here at 855-560-9900, 855-560-9900. Also, get out to cardoctorshow.com, our brand new website. And I owe a couple of posts up there. I'm generating a blog just talking about different things I see during the course of the week and the life cycle of an auto repair. So cardoctorshow.com. And if you need me during the week, ron@cardoctorshow.com, drop me a line. Right now, let's get over to Brian in Philly with some comments. He's a firefighter, as I understand it. Any interesting car fire recently, Brian? Welcome aboard, sir. What's going on?
Hey, how you doing today?
Good.
Ron?
Yes, sir.
Ron, this actually made national news. I wasn't at this particular fire, but a brand new top-of-the-line Tesla Plaid caught fire. The owner was trying to get out, but the locks malfunctioned. He had to literally force his way out. So with a Tesla, it takes 25,000 gallons of water to put them out. A conventional car, 300 gallons. And like I said, there's 7,000 batteries within this Tesla, 2 hours to put it out. And so this gentleman, his lawyer is speaking for him. This is a brand new one. And, you know, the fire chiefs, there has to be certain training and certain guidelines we use. These things are actually scary when something like this happens.
All right, you know how long have you been a firefighter, Brian?
30 years.
Okay.
So I'm a volunteer, but 30 years.
So you've kind of seen it all.
Yeah, and I've taken all their extrication classes. I'll be honest, I am scared of these cars. Wow. You know, because there's low voltage, power voltage. Even when we shut the voltage down, what's the guarantee we're not going to get electrocuted?
Well, yeah. Listen, I'm not trying to diminish that. My concern with Teslas, I don't know if you caught the show about a month and a half, 2 months ago, we had Fireman Tim, as we call him, from Connecticut on, and he was talking about how the fires in a Tesla, because it's Tesla right now, right? Like Tesla is the electric car. The fire in a Tesla will burn hot enough that in some cases melt through into the ground and or become a small explosion.
You know what we had to do? What they had to do was they had to take this car, stick it at a municipal lot away from everything because of the chance of starting a fire again.
So
and this is the brand new top of the line. Elon Musk says, "Oh, we have to make some adjustments." People are lining up for this car. There's waiting lists. People don't realize the technology is not perfected.
Right. And
these cars are dangerous. I mean, this guy, he couldn't get out. He had to force his way out. He could have burned to death.
Right. Yeah.
People are paying all this money. And what really bothers me is all the American companies say, oh, we're going to go all electric by this year. God forbid that happens. Because let me tell you something. You know, I don't want to sound like Ralph Nader. He called the Corvair unsafe at any speed. These cars are unsafe with any fire or entrapment. And you know what I'm saying? I'm not a big fan of electric cars, but
what do you drive every day, Brian? What's your everyday car?
I have a 2017 Ford Fusion.
Okay.
No hybrid, just the straight up 2.5 inline four.
Right. Have you had to put out conventional vehicle fires?
Many, many, many times. It takes 300 gallons of water, and it's pretty quick.
Right. And this thing,
25,000 gallons of water. And it took 2 hours to do.
Where'd they get the water from?
Oh, we have tanker trucks. Basically, we have a lot of water. It's a suburb, but there's a big water supply. Like I said, there's a very ample water supply. The fire trucks carry a lot of water, but we had to call out twice as many fire vehicles because we needed more pumps to pump out more water.
What do you think's going to happen for that electric vehicle, just your perspective, I'm fine with this. You know, there are certain parts, and we'll talk about Route 80. Route 80, you know, goes from one end of the country to the other, and there's certain parts of Route 80 that are just desolate. You're out in the middle of nowhere. You know,
and you know what? Let's see. There's no infrastructure. If you run out of electricity, you're stuck. Maybe it's the winter. But the thing is, especially the Americans, they keep pushing the concept they're going to go 100% electric by this date.
Right.
It's impossible. And you brought up a very good point. My niece lives in Arizona. The grid can't keep up with the hot weather and all the air conditioning and things like that. How are we going to set up an infrastructure on the Western United States if we can't even manage to keep air conditionings going? This is a pipe dream.
Well,
and you know what? I hope it never gets this.
One of the issues is, and I had lunch with dinner with a very dear friend this week. Tony and I went to the diner. We were talking, and it wasn't an argument. I've never had an argument with Tony in all the years that I've known him. But he's like, Ron, you got to get behind electric vehicles. You got to embrace it for what it is. And what I had said to him is what I'm going to say to all of you. I've yet to see how this technology is going to work. And Tony made the argument that, you know, the blacksmith back at the turn of the previous century that was shoeing horses was being told or telling everybody, you know what, they're never going to get gasoline combustion vehicles off the ground. Where are we going to get gas from? Where are we going to get the supply from? Where is it all going to happen? But the world was very different then in my mind. It wasn't as connected and it wasn't as global as it is today. And it wasn't a question of air pollution as their argument for getting rid of electric vehicles is now. They want electric vehicles to help clean up the air, which we could have that conversation about where's the electricity going to come from. But one of the things I took away from my conversation with Tony is we have to be open-minded, but you've got to show me something. You know, I kept thinking about this all week after dinner. I want the Star Trek effect. All right.
Mm-hmm.
I want somebody to show me the phaser, the transporter. You know, I want to see the next level of technology. It's not that we're anti-electric vehicle. It's we're anti-stupidity. And I think that's, I just think people don't want stupid. We're done with that. And if you can't produce a product that's going to actually work, right, Tony, if they could come out, I'm sorry, Tony, Brian, if they could come out with an electric vehicle, it was easy to be extinguished, easy to recharge, easy to recycle, and affordable and more reliable, and you knew that it was a practical, more practical, as well broken in as a gas car, wouldn't you be more open to the idea?
I absolutely would. But, you know, I'd be more comfortable, too, if it was maybe a plug-in with, and it had maybe, it could also, like, if you needed it, run on gasoline, too.
Right.
Run on that. And there are cars like that. You know, there's hybrids that could also run on full plug-in. And a friend of mine has one, but at least you have the gas backup. I mean, I'd be fine for partial electric, but I want internal combustion. I don't care if it's hybrid. I want internal combustion. And, you know, even they're coming out with, electric tractor trailers where UPS and
yes.
Walmart bought them. I used to drive tractor trailers. I've driven diesel and I've driven natural gas because, you know, natural gas, we don't have an infrastructure, but they run fine. As a truck driver, nobody expects it to be any good. You know, we can't shift. You know, we don't have any mechanism. You know, because you have to have a mechanism of shifting, upshift, downshift. I think these are all a pipe dream. I think Elon Musk, everything he's, you know, it's over-optimism. It's over-optimism by the big three. They're making it sound like a rosy picture, like this is easy to happen. Look, I'm 54. I think I'll be long dead when they perfect this.
Right. Well, and I'll leave it here. I'll tell you what, Brian, let me leave it here as my last thought because we could go on all hour. You know, somebody made a comment to me this week that the reason Tesla is doing so well, and I haven't verified this, but I think it's a valid point to consider, is because he's also receiving a lot of government rebate and funding and tax credits and allowances that the U.S. government is kind of behind Tesla at some level trying to push this product along because they want it to happen. You know, what's going to happen when all that government financing, so to speak, goes away? I always think about that caller we had from Mexico a few months back. And we've got callers all over the world with podcasting and streaming, not just terrestrial radio stations. And he called in and he was kind of laughing at us. He said, you know, not laughing at us, but he said, you know, what's interesting about America is you guys are all going to go electric and Mexico is not going to go electric anytime soon. Or we're not even predicting it because we don't have the infrastructure. Mexico is a poor country. Mexico can't afford to do what America is going to do as they claim they're going to put electric chargers all up and down every highway. He says it's never going to happen here. And I keep thinking about, you know, somebody must know something I don't know because I'm pretty sure the air blows all around. It doesn't get to Mexico and stop, and we keep the clean air on our side and the dirty air on their side. So I just look at all this and I scratch my head, and that's my comment. You know, I'm anti-stupid. I'm not anti-electric car. I'm just anti-stupid. You got to show me something common sense. You got to show me Star Trek. Show me how this is going to work. Don't tell me we're going to do it and expect me to wait 15 years for the answer. Appreciate the call, Brian. Keep them coming. 855-560-9900. Ron and Annie, the Car Doctor, coming back right after this.
I had enough for the day. I hit the radio dial and tuned it up all the way. I got a dance.
Welcome back. Ron and Annie, the Car Doctor. Isn't it great when you look at, you know, it's you get into some of the YouTube videos with the older songs, you know, watching the car songs being done live on Ed Sullivan from the 60s. I watched the Beach Boys do 409 the other day on Ed Sullivan out on YouTube, and it was just, and I'm dating myself, Ed Sullivan, right? You know, Sunday nights, Ed Sullivan, right? It was, you always knew when it was time for bed at 9 o'clock when Ed Sullivan was over, but just what great car songs went with the great cars of the 60s and the 70s? The 80s, not so much. And the 90s, Nobody's writing car songs about Priuses, trust me. So let's get over to Sam in Arizona, 03 Buick LeSabre. Sam, what's going on here? How can I help?
Hi, thanks. So try to start my car coming out from work when it's really hot here in Tucson.
Right.
Like 105 and a couple times, so it's intermittent. It won't start.
Wait a minute. Wait a minute. It's how hot?
105.
Brother.
Dry heat.
Dry heat. You know, I keep hearing that argument. It's a dry heat. Let me tell you, 105 is 105. All right? It's still hot. God bless you.
Yeah.
Anyway, go ahead. It starts okay cold, though.
It doesn't have this problem, typically.
Right.
Especially cold. So, it won't start, and if I gas it, it'll start and stay started as long as I keep my foot on the pedal. But as soon as I left my foot off the pedal, it'll die. The RPMs come down. But so, to get home, I like started in neutral, and then while keep the gas on a little bit, put it in reverse and backed out, and then try to put it in drive, and it kept on dying until I figured out, you know, barely just touching the pedal without messing up the gears, the transmission, shifting it, and getting going forward. And then once I got on the highway, it was okay, and I got home, and it was okay. A couple days later, it did it again in the morning. I'm sorry, late morning was hot outside, like 105 still, and I had to use the pedal to keep it going for a little bit. So I checked the throttle position sensor with a scan tool with just the key on, not the ignition on, and when I step on the pedal, you can see the throttle position sensor goes from 0% to 100% perfect.
Okay.
I don't think it's a throttle position sensor.
I don't think it could be. I don't think so either. I'll tell you what, let me pull over and take a pause, and when we come back, I'll have an answer for you because I think I know what's wrong with your car. Sam, I'll be back right after this. I'm Ron Anini, the car doctor. Everybody else, don't go away.
Every highway, let me slip away on you. Every highway.
Welcome back, Ron Anini, the car doctor. Let's get back to Sam in Arizona. Sam, you're there, sir.
Yeah, hi, thanks.
Hi. So, you know, when you go to start this after it's sitting and it's hot, it's a long crank time, right? You have to hold your foot to the floor?
No, I just give it a little gas and it'll start.
Okay, what's a little quarter throttle?
Yeah.
Okay. So, any work done to this? Any repair? Any diagnostic attempts done to this? Any repair attempts? Anything?
Just me looking for vacuum leaks or any.
Okay.
Obviously.
Do you know what the fuel pressure
wires?
Do you know where the fuel pressure regulator is?
Yeah, I took that off. There's no fuel in there. The line.
Okay. Well, what I want you to do is take the vacuum line off, and when the car is hot, I want you to take the vacuum line off and let it sit with the line off. Put a little tissue paper in the vacuum nipple, you know, toilet paper. Just put a little ball of toilet. You know, I don't want you to get it stuck in there. What I want to see is, as the vehicle gets hot, does it start to out fuel, you know, spritz out fuel onto the tissue paper? If you take the tissue paper out of that little vacuum nipple, you know, 2 hours later, does it have gasoline on it?
Just when it's sitting?
Yeah, just when it's sitting.
Okay.
You know, just when it's sitting. The idea is that because it's so hot, the heat is building pressure in the fuel rail, all right? And it's pushing fuel out past the rubber diaphragm, and you're gonna find fuel or the odor of fuel on that tissue. Make sense?
Yeah, so if that's the case, then it's the regulator.
Then it's the regulator needs to be replaced. The regulators went porous all the time. Sometimes, and they are persnickety. That is the word. Because I'm telling you, if you ever have a bad one that drives you crazy, you're going to go, that was persnickety. That was a Ron word. All right? We would actually go down to the small engine lawnmower shop and get, you know, clear plastic fuel line and put the clear plastic fuel line on the nipple, and then put the rubber vacuum hose on the other end of the clear plastic fuel line, and we would actually see fuel while the engine was running. up the vacuum line. You know, you would see it start to, in some cases, we saw some bad ones where we'd see bubbles. Well, if you see bubbles, that means the rest of it's fuel. It's drawing fuel out the regulator, and that was the reason the car ran so bad. Double check that fuel pressure regulator. Be as exact as you can. Call me back. Let me know what happens. Till then, I'm Ron Ananian, the car doctor, reminding all of you, good mechanics aren't expensive. They're priceless. See ya.